I'm Susan Rasky. I'm on the faculty at the Graduate School of Journalism here. This is the polling panel. I'll introduce our guests in just a second, but I want to say that our job here for the next few minutes is to try and be as informal and conversational as we can. You can blame me and Ethan for not allowing these guys to bring data, except what they could carry in their heads. But our job here is at least partly to provide a check on the political consultants who we heard from yesterday and who we're going to hear from later this afternoon. One of the things that often happens at these conferences is we hear about the great strategic decisions made around the big campaign table, and sometimes we wonder whether it was the great strategy or whether things were already baked long before then. So I hope our pollsters will at least answer that, give us some of the lay of the land as we went into the general election after the primary was done, where the electorate stood. And I know that Susan has exit poll data from the LA Times, and I know that Phil has some niche data that he wants to talk about, and I'm hoping what we can do is pick up where the other panel left off and talk a little bit about what the future, the red-blue future for California might be, because after all, Mr. Schwarzenegger won't be here the next time we have this conference. So without further ado, let me introduce on my right, my immediate right, is Susan Pincus, who is head of, I almost called you chief of staff to Governor Schwarzenegger.
I would have liked her bonus.
She's been director of the LA Times poll since 1997. I know most of you know her. And on my immediate left is Phil Traunstein, who used to be part of our journalistic brethren, then went to the dark side, and is now the director of the Survey and Policy Research Institute at San Jose University, which does surveys, analysis, and report generation. And then on, let me do it this way, on Phil's left is Mark DiCamillo, head of the field poll, the venerable field poll, as we always say when we describe it. And to my far right, Mark Baldessari, still director of research at the Public Policy Institute of California, but now newly appointed CEO and president of PPIC. So, yeah. Bravo. Anyway, guys, I thought a good place to start might be with the chart behind me, which just takes a look at the major statewide polls. And I must say we are so, so lucky in this state to have a number of public polls rather than just one, or have outsiders come in and do our polling. As a mere journalist looking at this poll, folks, and then let me, if I may, toggle this, and you all sort of see a steady progression to Arnold, which shows, to my mind at least, essentially the same thing, that as people found the state to be on either the right track or the wrong track, so went Arnold's fortunes. So I guess the first question to open to all of you, and Mark Baldessari, I don't know if you want to start, I'm sorry. Mark DiCamillo, forgive me.
I think I'd rather be Mark Baldessari. Right.
We're often confused.
It was Susan Kennedy Wright yesterday. I mean, was this cake baked somewhere early in January of 2006? And it really didn't matter that we had a primary. Nothing mattered but what the Schwarzenegger campaign was doing to position Arnold?
No, I think, in each of our polls, the governor, if you look at it first from the governor's Republican side, they improved Arnold's standing with voters in every single poll that we did, starting in January and moving up to the election. And, the highest rating he got was at the election. So he definitely, very successful campaigning to peak at the right moment, which is the election. He was at his high point of the year. So, he improved his standing throughout the whole election cycle. Now, when you look at it from the Democratic side, on the other hand, Angelides and Wesley, at the beginning of the year, really weren't that well known to voters. But as they made it through, as Angelides made it through the primary, he was actually, I think, weakened by the election, the primary election. If you look at our polling data on how voters viewed Angelides right at the time of the primary, and I'm talking about the general electorate, not Democrats, he actually had a more negative than positive rating at the time of the primary, and you know, that really put him in a tough position from which to start the general election, and obviously the funding wasn't as he was spending all his money in the primary as well. So I think he was at a very weak position to start. He really didn't get a big bounce off of the primary. Arnold kept making policy decisions and making peace and breaking bread with the state legislature, which moved him in voters' minds more toward the center, kind of occupying the center, very strong center position. That was one of the reasons why voters improved their view of Schwarzenegger. But again, Angelides, coming out of a divisive primary, really didn't have a great shot at it, I would say, from June on.
Phil, go ahead.
Well, I agree with what Mark just said, except there was an interesting wrinkle, and that is in June, when we asked the question, we asked a series of questions in our survey about approval ratings on Bush and Iraq, Bush's handling the economy, and we correlated. My brilliant political scientist daughter did the regressions, and figured out. We showed that there was this very strong relationship between being opposed to Bush on Iraq and the economy, and a tendency to vote for someone other than Schwarzenegger in the governor's race. And I think that was at a time when people had not yet begun to concentrate fully on the race between Schwarzenegger and Angelides, and they were using these national cues to give them a shortcut toward the governor's race, but it appeared to be a very strong correlation. That is, if you were opposed to Bush on Iraq, you were much more likely to vote for Angelides, and if you were, and of course, vast majority of people were opposed to Bush on Iraq. I think this was a seductive thing. It appeared to me that this was a seductive thing to the Angelides campaign, looking for some opening to go after Schwarzenegger. The problem is, when we came back on the next survey, and that was in September, and asked the question, does your opinion about Bush have any effect on your vote for governor? It was overwhelmingly no. That is, even among Democrats, people said their negative opinion of Bush had no effect on their vote in the governor's race. I think the importance here is, it is clear that by the time the end of the summer came around, and by the time the general election was beginning to gear up, Schwarzenegger had so distinguished himself from Bush that there was no way voters in California were going to see them as evil twins. And unfortunately, Angelides put an awful lot, from his point of view, put an awful lot of his eggs into that basket for quite a long time, and it never went anywhere.
Go ahead, Susan. I want to twist the question slightly, but if you want to respond to that one, go ahead.
I do, too.
Okay.
To play on what Phil just said, we asked the question, do you have a favorable, unfavorable impression of Schwarzenegger in our September pre-general election poll, and it was like 60% favorable, 29% unfavorable, something like that. And we asked, why did you have an unfavorable impression? And to go along with what Phil said, only 2% said because he's a Republican and they think of him as, Bush, because Angelides tried to make that a big issue with advertising, connecting Bush to Schwarzenegger, and it didn't play out. So you're right. Bush really didn't have any play in this election. What I wanted to say was Angelides from right after the primary was in a lot of trouble. First of all, he didn't have any money to put any ads on, and Schwarzenegger did. The ad that had him walking backwards, I don't know if it played in L.A., I don't know where else it played, was pretty effective. Angelides did not resonate with the voters. Schwarzenegger became a centrist again. That's why he was elected on the recall election. People wanted a moderate, a centrist governor, and he came back to that fold. He became more bipartisan. We asked the question, who would do a better job on education, illegal immigration, the state budget, environment? And Schwarzenegger beat Angelides on most of those issues. So he didn't resonate. And Schwarzenegger was a bigger-than-life candidate, and his job approval ratings after the election, starting in about August, actually he started getting better. His numbers started getting better in around May, June, July. But in August, his numbers turned around and he became a more positive candidate. His job approval ratings became more positive. So he became the better candidate. And Angelides, in all of our polling, it showed that he did not resonate. He did the voters could not get behind him. They didn't know what he really stood for. And if you look at some of the demographics, which I thought was really amazing in our exit poll, it was 26% of Democrats voted for Schwarzenegger. And if you looked at it, it was among moderate Democrats, it was 36%. And in our pre-election polling, it was about 31% of Democrats. He only got about 61% of Democrats voting for him for Angelides. So if you can't get your own constituency behind you, it's very difficult to get others. Independents were going for Schwarzenegger. So Angelides had a very hard time.
Quickly.
Mark, before you start, I just want to ask you if you will broaden it a little bit and tell us what was on the minds of the electorate, kind of mood of the electorate as the...
Yeah. I will put it in the broader perspective. This was a time that was good for incumbents in California. Compared to the year before, the right direction, wrong direction numbers were better. The perceptions of the economy were better, even though there were concerns about gasoline prices. It was also a time in California where there was a stark contrast between our state moving policy forward and at the national level, what was going on in terms of public policy. We had conducted four polls after the primary, monthly polls of at least 1,000 likely voters. We believe the election was never close from July on. When our first polls were released, Democratic consultants criticized them and said that we talked to too many Republicans in our survey. I guess they're complaining again. Oh, no. Right. Okay. But actually, what we we had an 8 to 10 point margin of more Democrats than Republicans in all of our pre-election surveys, and we knew that the real problem for Phil Angelides wasn't the number of that we weren't talking to enough Democrats, but that enough Democrats weren't supporting him.
Right.
When a Democratic candidate's having a tough time getting to 50% in the Bay Area, there's a problem, and that problem started in the primary. It showed up in the results of the primary because there was only 120,000 vote margin between Wesley and Angelides in the primary. It was a bitter primary, and one in which I thought brought out the kinds of issues which Californians were saying that they're tired of, which is a lot of infighting, a lot of negativity. And they were getting that from Washington. They got that from the Democratic primary. And they got something different from Schwarzenegger when he passed a budget on time and then began to sign a series of bills that Democrats in the legislature had passed.
Whose dog is this?
It's mine.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
Something about my voice.
I would still like to get to the lay of the land, which I don't feel like I have the general mood of the electorate. I want to take in part of what John was talking about income inequality. What were the issues that were on voters' minds? I'm trying to figure out whether Schwarzenegger made a clever exploitation of the issues on voters' minds, or there was really nothing on voters' minds, and there was just a nice...
In our summer poll, I think this was a July poll, we asked the question about what specific issues are most important to you in deciding who you're going to support for governor. And we posed 8 categories, big, broad categories, to voters. And what we got back, again, this is the beginning of the general election cycle. Illegal immigration came back most, 44% said that was among their most important issues. Education was right behind it at 43. So those, to me, were the 2 top-tier issues, and I think most of the other polls that would ask questions, you know, just what's the most important issue, would find the same 2 at the top. But there were other issues. I mean, health care had a constituency, 36%. Jobs in the economy, 36. Gasoline prices, 32. Taxes was at 31. But among people who were voting for Schwarzenegger, taxes was their number 2 ranking issue, only trailing illegal immigration. So as you kind of looked at how is Arnold going to handle the issues, I think one of the most interesting things that he did, in my judgment, just observing the election, was he downplayed the salience of illegal immigration, even though it came back in voter survey after voter survey as the top issue in the race, because I think it really jeopardized his position with his core Republican base. But on the other hand, taxes, which was the number 2 issue to his Republican supporters and to Schwarzenegger voters, he really emphasized the differences between himself and Angelita. So, you know, I think that was a very, and then on a lot of the other issues, he was able to finesse the health care issue by calling this health summit and then never having to really take a position, say, I'll do that next year. You know, just the handling of the issues from the campaign side, I thought that management was excellent.
Let me just follow up on what Mark just said, because I think he's got a really good point here. We began asking in March, we began asking the question in our survey, in your opinion, should undocumented or illegal immigrants living or working here be allowed to become legal residents of California? And the number began at 54% in March in favor. In June, it was 50%. In September, it was 55%. Just recently in January, it was 61%. I believe the Schwarzenegger people understood that this issue was critical for them to simply get off the table. I'd love to hear what Susan says about this later, but from our looking at the data, it appears to me that they understood that this was not something, even if it was a salient issue among the public, it was not something that they wanted to make a big deal about.
But we did test the 4 top issues that were important to California voters. It was education, illegal immigration, the environment, and state budget. And we said, okay, and we tested them each discreetly, and we said, who would be better at this, Schwarzenegger or Angelides? And this was on our exit poll. On all of them, Schwarzenegger beat Angelides. So even though Angelides was a liberal, very pro-environmental, you know, said he was going to be the education governor, and if illegal immigration was supposed to be downplayed and it was going to be a negative for Schwarzenegger, it doesn't appear that it was in the electorate. But you also have to remember that our electorate, even though a quarter of registered voters are Latino in the state, only about, I think it was like 12% came out to vote. I mean, it wasn't a really, it wasn't a large number. And that's the problem with our electorate. It was 75% white, and the registered voters in the state is 61% white. So as the panel before us said, you know, it depends on who comes out to vote versus who the residents are in the state. So, I mean, Schwarzenegger really had a leg up over Angelides in this election.
So the top issues throughout the year for our polls were education, immigration, health care, environment, budget and taxes. The governor successfully worked with the Democrats in 2006 to pass a budget on time that gave extra money to education and took that issue off the table. He passed a measure on prescription drug discounts and started a health care initiative, which helped him along those lines. And very importantly, I think, passed that what was viewed not just in California but worldwide as a measure on global warming that was going to, you know, set standards for others to look at. Neither the Democrats nor the Republicans particularly wanted to talk about immigration in this election, and I think that both steered away from it.
Where did the infrastructure rank in your list of issues hot on the brain of?
It ranked really low. I mean, you know, people said traffic, you know, they're concerned about their traffic, but the issue of infrastructure was never one of the top issues on the minds of the electorate. But it was an issue in which the governor could once again demonstrate that he could work with the Democrats, put something on the ballot that proved that there was, you know, it was possible to do things on a bipartisan basis in California without raising taxes, importantly, that Washington couldn't do. So that he was not like George Bush.
I'm just reminded of a governor's conference held here many years ago where the Pete Wilson people sat in stunned silence as the other side said education didn't show up very much as an issue. And they all said, yeah, that's when you're supposed to make it one. So I sort of consultant memory, perhaps, on the Republican side. I want to talk a little bit about independent voters and absentee voters. I want to know how all of your polling, especially when you got down to the late stages of the horse race, was affected by the increasing number of absentee voters. And if you'll tell us, I want to know what your methodology is on incorporating them into your data.
Well, absentee voters is making our life miserable in terms of exit polling. Because when you do an exit poll, you're basically getting people coming out of the precinct, and so that's not 100% of the voters. So what we do, well, first of all, this election, it was about almost 42% of the voters were absentee, and California makes it very easy because now we can have permanent absentee voters. And what was interesting, so what you're getting is you're getting 42% are sending it in versus 58% that you're getting at the precinct, at the precinct levels. So for our exit polling, we get a list of all of the absentee voters, and we do a random selection within that absentee list. And the weekend before through Monday, so Tuesday is the election, we have a telephone survey of all these likely voters or these voters that have already voted absentee, and what we do is model it into our exit poll. But what I found really interesting was among the absentee voters, Schwarzenegger just overwhelmed Angelides. It was, I think, 60-something percent. Schwarzenegger got 62% of absentee voters. But when you look at our precinct voters, it was much closer. It was something like 49-41%. So he really made, so that get out the vote, the absentee vote was really important. We do ask the question, when did you decide to vote? And if they said that they voted today, meaning the election, that was 7% of the voters, and they were split, 41 for Schwarzenegger, 42 for Angelides. And if they thought about it and they thought about their candidate over that last weekend before the election, that was 4%. So you have 11% that are saying it's over the weekend. But that 4%, it's 46% Schwarzenegger, Angelides, 44%. And then if you decided much later who you were going to vote for, it was much bigger. It was like an 89% of the people thought about that later, and it was 58% Schwarzenegger, 38% Angelides. So you see, I guess if Angelides had about another week or so, it might have changed the election. Who knows? But you can see that for some reason, as it got closer to the election, I don't know if Angelides loosened up or said the things that he was supposed to say all through the election, but that people have sort of, you know, came closer to voting for Angelides, whereas Schwarzenegger got the earlier vote. So I don't know if campaigns have to think about doing their campaigns earlier because of these absentee voters. I mean, they are going to make up a larger share of the vote each as we go along. So I think that's something to consider as campaign consultants are working on their candidate's campaign.
Mark DiCamillo, we talk about what do you do in the last two or three polls before the election, or actually, you know, once you get to the middle of October.
Well, it's interesting, you know, the effect of the growth of absentee voting on polling, because I can understand it, exit polling, it makes your life miserable, because literally you have to do two samples. But it actually makes pre-election polling, especially in the final weeks, easier. I mean, I'm really grateful for the rise of absentee voting, and the main reason is in our final poll, you know, which is done in the last week, you get about 20% of the people telling you that they've already voted. Well, in trying to determine, I mean, one of the hardest things in a pre-election poll is modeling the likely voters. Who among all these voters that I just talked to are going to actually vote? I mean, you always get an over-testimony of voting. But if somebody tells you they already voted, hallelujah. I mean, I got them.
But wait a minute. Don't stop there. So do you ask them then, well, who did you vote for?
Yes, exactly.
And do you call that a likely voter in your sample, or do you call it a... Well,
they're part of the likely voter sample. We don't, you know,
for... Why do you call it a likely voter rather than an already voter?
Because they're in the voter pool.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an ethical issue for journalists. I personally would take offense if I started reading polls that said, among the people who've already voted, Schwarzenegger is ahead by 20 points, or whatever it is. I think that would border on, you know, the kinds of problems we had when you had early calls based on exit polls. So we just include them in the likely voter sample. I don't think you break them up.
They get the highest score in your likely voter sample. In your likely voter sample.
And Phil, are you feeling?
I think that's the only way you can handle it.
And I just want to make sure that everybody's numbers are the same. We're looking at 20% by the final week.
Well, I mean, it depends on your final when you do your final poll.
Oh, but you know, you're all doing them roughly the same.
Right. Yeah, I agree with Mark from the perspective of pre-election polling. The fact that you have 40% of people voting absentee and a lot of people voting. In the end, it's great for polling. It's got to make life really difficult for consultants, though, because a lot of money spent in those last couple of weeks is reaching an audience that's already made up their minds.
Right.
Do you see any change in your when does the absentees start?
The 15th? 3 weeks before.
Yeah, so did you guys see anything, any little ticks starting in your data after October 15th? I mean, can you begin
not
to detect it at that point?
Not on the governor's election in our case, no.
Right. I want to give you a chance to talk about quickly some of the other technical issues, and then we'll throw to the audience. One of the things Merfield has for years talked about is the difficulty with callbacks, with sampling. Are any of you making any kind of progress on breaking down some of the ethnic vote? You heard Thad Kauser mention that nobody is doing enough on the API vote. Where are you guys on subgroups and on some of the other technical issues of polling?
I'll start first.
Oh, go ahead.
To poll in California is so difficult. I wish we lived in New Hampshire, where it's like 95% white and you don't have to worry about your ethnic votes. But when we do pre-election polling, it's really important to get the Latino vote. And what we do is we oversample so that we get enough Latino likely voters. The thing is, you get enough likely registered voters. I mean, you get enough Latino registered voters, but you never get enough likely voters. And you try every way you can to get them into this likely voter pool. Are you a first-time voter? Did you just register to vote? Anything to get, you know, to get the ethnic group in. So we do, in the LA Times, we do that. In terms of Asian polling, it is very difficult to do Asian polling. First of all, what we all do is, well, I guess I'll speak for myself, but Asians, we only get Asians who speak English, because if we were going to do Asians in other languages, First of all, it tacks on about 2 to 4 days, number one, who has the money. Number two, you have to translate the questionnaire into these 4 or 5 languages, get them back translated so that you think that, you know, that it's right. So all this costs time and money, and we just don't have it. I mean, so there is a difficulty with an Asian vote. The only good thing about exit polling is you get enough Asians, you get enough Jews. You know, we always say, hallelujah, we get enough of these groups, to, you know, to look at. But other than that, to do pre-election polling, it is very, very difficult.
If I could just add, we, you know, we're in the field monthly with at least 2,000 adults, and a couple of times a year we will interview in Asian languages as well. So what we've been doing is pooling our responses across surveys to look at the, in particular, the Asian Pacific Islander vote. And for our monthly surveys in English and Spanish, we've been, you know, since we start with a large sample size, we end up with a substantial number of Latino voters in our state, so we feel pretty good about that. But it is the case that our we're taking more time in the field, we're doing more callbacks, and our expenses are going up and up and up.
I'll concur with that. Some of the other issues, you know, that relate to the pre-election polling that cause me problems or just make me worry is the amount of time you can spend with a respondent or voter, I think, is starting to decline. I think people will voluntarily give you less of their time than they used to. They used to love to talk on the phone. Now it's their lives are so hectic. It's, I'll talk to you, but make it short. What that means for us is, you know, in this last election cycle, we were polling on 11 different propositions. Now, the propositions, and we've tested this, and I know I've read stuff that PPIC has done, that you really makes a difference if you read the whole ballot description as it appears on the election ballot versus some truncated version, even if it's just the description and it's a neutral description. You really have to read the whole ballot, and that makes it really tough. So we end up split sampling, you know, trying to cover as many as we can so that no one voter gets all 11 descriptions. I mean, to me, that's with our new, you know, initiative democracy that we have here, that's causing us problems.
Phil, let me ask you, because you've done a lot on niche polling. You're also in an area of the state where you've got subgroups within. I don't even know how we classify. I mean, are you able to classify Indian or Afghan or Filipino voters at all?
No, you can't. We can't get enough. We do monthly, quarterly survey of about 1,000 on consumer confidence, and we translate it in Spanish, and we do it in Vietnamese because there's a large Vietnamese population in Silicon Valley, and we oversample for Silicon Valley. So we do it in both Spanish and Vietnamese, but unless you have the kind of resources that PPIC has, I think, you can't really do, oh, seriously, I mean, it's just huge amounts of resources required to do it, and I'm grateful that Mark is able to do that because nobody else has the reach to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. Susan, I want to make sure that we do have time to talk about the independent voters, because I think it's just such a crucial question for Californians about where that's going, and it has national implications. And the fact that since the recall, the number of independents has grown by almost about 500,000 in California, and the number of voters who registered as Democrat and Republican combined has actually declined. I think it's just a huge trend that that really deserves a lot of attention. And the fact that independent voters in this last election switched from, they voted for Schwarzenegger in 2003 to, and they loved him in 2004 to, they were against him in 2005 in the special election, and slowly but surely he gained their confidence back in 2006, even as they voted for Democrats. Feinstein and congressional candidates in California, I think, is really important because there's so many independents now. It was almost 20% of the electorate, about 14 or 15% according to our post-election surveys. and the growing number of voters in this state, and the fact that even among the registered voters now, 4 in 10 are saying that they're not strong Democrats or Republicans, tells us that it's not just the new voters, but it's the potential among people who are registered as Republicans and Democrats to say, I'm going to become the client of state in the future, is really the trend to watch, and the one that is in some ways most challenging for the pollsters.
Mark, I don't know if you want to challenge that, but I want to at least ask whether if Ray Wolfinger were sitting here, on his behalf,
right,
would he say, tell me what else is new? We've seen this forever and ever. These are simply people who are less attached, but they definitely lean, and they're in the middle up for grabs.
What's new is the numbers. With all due respect to Ray, his work from the National Election Surveys, and the numbers who are now registered as declines of state, not giving the party ID as independent in any given election, is such a large number. And it's true, for instance, if you look back to 1990 and 1994, that Pete Wilson did very well because, he attracted the independent vote. That was a much smaller number than it is today. And when Schwarzenegger says, I think that this is, 20 years from now, the number of independents could outnumber the number of Democrats or Republicans, you know what? If current trends continue, that's true. It would. If you look at the annual rate of growth of independents and compare it to the annual rate of decline of Democrats and Republicans, we could have, we have 3 million independents today. We could have many, many more in the future.
And go ahead, Mark, if you want to.
I definitely agree with Mark that the rise of independent voting is going to be the new wave, just as I think the rise of absentee voting was the wave the last 10 years. The one thing I would make with independent voters is I view them as a much more intermittent voting constituency. That is, they're not regular voters. They will turn out when their interests are being aroused. For example, in the June primary, voters who were registered as either Democrats or Republicans constituted 88% of all the voters. And if you looked at just the people who were the declined state right in the statement of vote, it was just 9%. 9% of the voters in the primary were nonpartisans. Now, they constitute 18% of the electorate, but in a primary, they're not there, certainly not as much. In a general, I think Mark's probably I kind of lean to his data. He showed it at 14% in the post-election. Yeah. That's still a sizable constituency. It's growing. But, I would look at the characteristics of independents. They're not as tied to parties. They are a younger constituency. They're more likely to be ethnic voters. They have some of the characteristics of not regular voters.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think that's true. And let me, if we go back to the primary, Mark, which I think is a really good example of how our governance system is not particularly aligned with the trends in the voting age population anymore. The last two primaries have set records for low voter attendance. And I don't think that that's necessarily a trend that's unrelated to, I think it's a trend that's related to the growth of independent voters. Our primaries are not of particular interest to independent voters. It raises questions about our direct democracy system in particular, because those primaries, you can put ballots on the measure in the primary and change the constitution or state laws in the primaries, but they're even less reflective of the voting population than the general election, which we know doesn't reflect the adult population.
And I just wanted to add to that, even though there is this growing number of independents, their share of voting has not increased. There's still a smaller number than their share of the electorate, of their registration. So I don't know if that means that they register independent because they have less interest in politics or less interest in elections or whatever, or the process, and that's why they're independent, or if there are other reasons. But you have to be careful about that particular group of voters, because they don't vote their share of what they are.
This is true, but, you know, given that our population is growing in the state and there are fewer Democrats registered today than there were in 2003, I think is a very telling trend about where, and Democrats outnumber Republicans in this state, is a very telling trend of where we're going in terms of the major party system in this state.
Phil, you wanted in on...
No, well, I have a slightly different point of view, and I don't think this is a good time to get into a long discussion of it. My tendency is to believe that people who say they're independents tend to function as if they were Democrats and Republicans. But I think there's another discussion here. what I want to do is come back to a point that I think needs to be clearly understood, and that is just how incredibly different Schwarzenegger has created a profile of himself as compared to Bush in California, because it was the essence of why he survived this election, and it's the essence of where he stands now. George Bush's approval rating by our last reading, and that was early January, among all adults in California is 26%, and among voters it was 30%. Schwarzenegger's approval rating is 63%. It's really fairly astonishing the way that he has separated himself from the National Republican Party, from the White House in particular. This was a result of the way he handled himself in this election. Now, you can argue, and I think Bob Mulholland will, that it was the money that was available to Schwarzenegger that made it possible for him to reposition himself. And I agree with that, that's the base. But the fact is, there were political decisions made by the governor and his people that completely, 180 degrees, turned this man's image around. And it's quite remarkable. It's extraordinary piece of American political lore, it seems to me. And we should not underestimate it.
I think that's a good point. It sort of sets us up for the final question I want to ask all of you before we throw it to the audience. Bush is going to be gone. Schwarzenegger is going to be gone. Is Schwarzenegger a phenomenon that simply, you know, belongs to a movie star superhero? And what's next? Given this terrain and given that the numbers seem to suggest a California electorate, if we believe Mo, basically in the middle, well, the electorate there to be captured. Where does that set us up for the next gubernatorial?
One thing that really was interesting to me, and I actually mentioned this to Mo after the talk, yesterday's hotline had this really fascinating tally of all of the votes that were cast for the U.S. Congress in the United States. And it showed a trend line. So it showed that, you know, in 2000, 2002, and 2004, nationally, Republicans got more votes for Congress than Democrats, whereas in this election, nationally, Democrats got more votes than Republicans by 5 points. Well, that's interesting. It shows a Democratic wave in this cycle. But what was fascinating to me, they broke out the states with the same data. And you look at California, and California, in this last election cycle, just the votes cast for Congress, 17 points for the Democrats. That's a gap of 12 points between the Democratic tally here in California and the national tally. And if you look at that 12-point gap, it's really the same gap that we saw in 2004 and 2002. I mean, it's an interesting gap. I mean, that's the point I'm trying to make, and it makes me think that, you know, in the post-Schwarzenegger era, we're still a real blue state. I mean, and it has been that way, at least in the election returns for the last, you know, four cycles.
But the thing is, Schwarzenegger, I mean, he won the recall. He didn't have to go through a Republican primary. And the Republican primaries are not, they basically elect conservative Republicans that do not make it in the state. Our state is moderate. We're centrist. We're a light blue state. I mean, Schwarzenegger was able to gain traction for his second term because he turned around. Notice when he went to the right, he got really bad job approval ratings. Everybody disliked him. You know, no one thought he was going to make it in this election. And and he remade himself to what he was when he ran for the recall. So, I mean, if a moderate Republican could win a Republican primary, they have a really good shot of becoming governor of California.
The California for the last, you know, decade of our polling has been very consistently among the voters, liberal on social and environmental issues, conservative on fiscal issues. It's a question of which primary, the Democratic or the Republican primary, is going to select a candidate who reflects those opinions. If the Democrats select a candidate who says, I'm going to raise taxes, then that candidate's going to have a hard time winning, even in this blue state. Particularly
right.
against a Republican who might say, "I'm not going to raise taxes, and I'm going to do more on I'm going to continue what Arnold Schwarzenegger's been doing on social and environmental issues."
Right, because he was anti-tax, fiscally prudent, but he was more left on the social issues, and that's basically California.
All right, with that, let's throw it to the audience. I hope somebody will ask about the possibility of moving the presidential primary to February, should that ever actually come up. Is that Mo back there? I better put my glasses on. Go ahead, Mo.
I have a mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I wonder if anybody on the panel had a breakdown by education, and I mean a detailed breakdown. The reason I ask that question is that that is the core, the lower middle class, upper working class, high school graduates and part college people, the core of the Reagan Democrats who also went for Perot, and they went for, that is the defectors from the Democratic Party, account for this, Pat Buchanan, David Duke, and that's the core of those votes, high school graduates and Park College. They were 59% of the total electorate when Gingrich took over Congress, so they're not trivial. Everybody thinks of the middle class as college educated, but they aren't. So could you tell us how they voted for the governorship in California, if you have the breakdown?
I have it by less than college or more. And if and that was less than college, there were about 46% of the electorate, and college or more was 54%. And they both went for Schwarzenegger, 58% of those with less than a college degree. Schwarzenegger, 55% who had a college degree or more went for Schwarzenegger.
Is that, Phil, do you have?
Is that
well,
what you,
I, the only thing I have is in September.
This was the exit poll.
In September, we had high school graduates were in favor of Angelides, 45, and Schwarzenegger, 30. People with some college, 45 for Schwarzenegger, 36 for Angelides, and people who are college graduates, 51 for Schwarzenegger and 30 for Angelides. So there was a clear line. Increasing education was a greater vote for Schwarzenegger.
Right, but that also has to do with income. You know, it has, there's more than just education involved in that.
All right, Mo.
Just a factoid that this speaks to the last 10 minutes of discussion. McClintock got more than 750,000 fewer votes than Arnold. So people who supported Arnold went to the next line in the ballot and said, well, I won't support that kind of Republican.
Well, actually, if you look at if they went, if you talk about the next line in the ballot, and you look at the difference between the Feinstein race and the Schwarzenegger race, I mean, if anything, that really shows how independent voters can, you know, on the one hand, strongly support a Democrat, and on the other hand, strongly support a Republican.
Right. There wasn't a coattail effect. I mean, Schwarzenegger did not have a coattail effect on the down ballots for Republicans. And the only one that lost was Bustamante, and he came along with his own baggage. So, I mean, that was kind of a different race because all the Democrats won.
Yeah, I would also say the weakness of Angelides. I mean, you know, it's not just the strength of Schwarzenegger. Angelides was just not there when it came to his own party's support. So, you know, when you're only at 60 or 63% among your own party, you're not going to win the general election.
I think that's a crucial factor.
Down here, Fred.
Thank you, Mark. I'd like to ask some questions about the independent vote and the primary. California, in the last election, voted down a reapportionment measure, and it was basically the opposition was the ideologically secure right and the ideological secure left. Schwarzenegger, it seems to me, by virtue of his nomination by the recall process and then his ability to preempt the nomination, avoided the primary process, whereas Angelides was more of a captive of it. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I'm one of these early voters. I get my ballot, I get the books, I study the issues, I talk to my friends, and most of my friends are the same way. Mm-hmm. So we vote right up front. But I found because of the constraints of some of the primary choices, I found myself voting for third-party candidates, mm-hmm. as not so much out of conviction, but out of protest. And so I'm wondering what the rise of the independents is going to do to the ideological constraints of the reapportionment system and the primary system of the long poll.
Well, I think a key question is whether the election system is going to adjust to the rise of the independent voters or not. You know, will there be another form of open primary that the Democratic and Republican parties and the third parties can, find acceptable at this point? You know, the voters passed a measure in 96. The 98 gubernatorial election was, a blanket primary. 2000, we had it, and then the court struck it down with the... So it'll be interesting to see whether there's, whether something will pass the court test, whether something that the parties recognize the importance of bringing in those independent voters early on.
And in the national primaries, it just depends on when the primaries and caucuses are. And now we're getting to the point where, in the paper today, the Democrat, Schwarzenegger, is suggesting that we move up our presidential primary to February 5th. And I think that has a lot of significance on how much money the candidates can raise and who is able to get into a California primary. It's not like New Hampshire and Iowa where you can knock on everybody's door and basically shake everybody's hand. You're looking at three states within one state. We have the North, the South, we have the Central Valley. So how does a candidate that doesn't have a lot of money participate in the California primary? So I think moving up the primary has a lot of significances as to how many candidates are left standing at the end of the day.
Also, maybe how many independents there are. Yes, there's a question back there.
How does moving the presidential primary affect the likely vote in the June primary that has all the other races on?
Uh-huh. That's a very good point. I think it would depress it. Myself, I mean, just look at look at our election in 2006. Our primary was a very low turnout. When you think about how many elections California had since 2000, I mean, the voters are vote weary. They say, "Gosh, another election! I can't believe it." And especially with the congressional races and maybe some more of the initiatives, it's not something that motivates the voter to go out to vote. So I think it would have a Personally, I think it would have a negative effect on a California election.
If the presidential primaries are competitive, which they are very likely to be, then there's going to be a lot of interest in them, and they're big magnets for votes. That's a magnet that won't be there in June.
Fat, in the back.
Sure. I'd like to hear more on illegal immigration, because that was a surprising non-issue, the dog that didn't bark in this election. What does your data tell you? The people who care about illegal immigration, what policy positions do they take? Are these folks who are fans of the Minutemen? Is there a polarization of people on both sides? But for the high salience people on immigration, what are their policy positions?
Thad, let me just say that one interesting thing that we found in our data, which, you're welcome to use this on our website, in 2006, is that there was a point where immigration became an issue, which had been an issue for Republicans and conservatives, also became an issue for Latinos and Democrats. So they're talking about very different things for people who described it as the most important issue. And, you know, that was a result of you know, the political movements that occurred during the course of the year and the demonstrations and so forth. And I think that's one of the reasons that the candidates wanted to stay away from it. It was a hot-button issue, which meant different things to different people.
Do any of you have data on, you know, a breakdown on, you know...
Who they are?
Yeah, well, who they are and what the, what their actual position is as opposed to just the issue.
Well, you know, I view them as much more likely to be Republican than Democrat, much more likely to be from Southern California. I mean, my God, you'd listen to talk radio down in Southern California, it's a lot about illegal immigration, whereas you don't get the same intensity of it here. So, you know, it's definitely an issue that has a Republican orientation in terms of the political impact it has on elections, just because what comes down the pike on elections are usually positions that play to the middle or play to the masses, and the masses, when it comes to illegal immigration, want to get tough on it. So it's a Republican issue, and I don't think the governor needed it. I mean, he already had the Republicans. He didn't want to alienate the Democrats, so he avoided it.
Somebody went back in on that. Is anybody pulling Latinos on immigration?
There was, again, a point in 2006 where immigration became the number, interestingly, the number one issue for Republicans and the number one issue for Latinos.
Yeah.
And, of course, those groups are not overlapping.
Yeah.
Too much.
Peter, down here, Peter Schrag. I will wait for the mic, Peter.
Yeah. You polled on attitudes about illegal immigrants and what people wanted to do, and were they more important as a as an asset to the economy, or are they more important, or were they a burden on services? And you found basically that they that what was 56% said that
more of a benefit than a burden.
More benefit.
Immigration.
35 or 39%.
Yeah. Yeah, we found, you know, solid support during the year, similar to the national surveys, for basically the guest worker program types of reforms, which President Bush was endorsing, which the Republicans in Congress were opposing. Overwhelming support across party groups.
We found that also about guest worker programs, temporary visas. People were in favor of that versus, you know, but they also want stricter enforcement of laws. So it's like the laws that are on the books already enforce, but they also understand the practicality of it, and you can't deport 14 million people or whatever. So they say that they are in favor of a guest worker program.
We got time for one more, and then you get to be fed. Anybody? The very back. Gentleman in the very back. Last word.
That's what makes this whole illegal immigration issue is what makes what could have happened so fascinating in terms of if McClintock would have run against Schwarzenegger in a Republican primary. Because you've made references to how Angelides was damaged in terms of money and in terms of issues, and he came out without any money and lost to Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger had the flexibility to shift basically to the left or to the center, as you say. Do you have any kind of polling data that compares McClintock to Schwarzenegger in a Republican primary? Was any study done of that possibility? Because that could have impacted how Schwarzenegger postured himself in the general election.
We didn't. I mean, Schwarzenegger was unopposed, so that was one less question we had to ask.
All right. I think with that, we're going to thank our panelists. There is...